This podcast contains explicit language.
And spoilers, only if you suck.
This is Dave.
Oh.
And that was Carlos.
Oh, Dave. Welcome to Mass, my child. Why did you let Satan stop the Kickstarter? Why did you? One, two, bad guys talk games.
Episode 45.
Episode 45. Where we talk about Kickstarters that failed. Because Satan!
Satan and his clones, who are completely corrupt.
Indeed. And connecting
yes, to the Oculus.
To the Oculus.
Which could be naughty or nice.
With their Xboxes online and off. With price, content, length, Peter Molyneux. That was the worst. That was the worst intro we've ever had for a podcast. Coming to you live from the Garneau Theater in Edmonton, Alberta. We're not live. We're not even at the Garneau.
No.
We're in your basement.
And, yep.
And it's like flooding in here. Like, my feet are wet, and we're going to die soon. And we figured, you know, we're sad sacks. We might as well just get a podcast out there before we die.
Well, speak for yourself.
What do you mean? You're here, right? Wait. You're a hologram!
Yes!
Where are you broadcasting from? Please say
it's another basement.
Another, so not the Garneau Theater live.
Not the Garneau Theater live.
Sunny but cold Edmonton, Alberta. So before we get started and talking about our first topic, which is about, you know, Satan and Kickstarters and whatnot, we are committed to a release schedule now of once every 2 weeks. And then every other Wednesday, so every second Wednesday, we want to put out an episode of Two Fat Guys Talk Games, finally get our shit together. And get to a schedule and stop playing like children up in this podcast business.
Once again, as we were talking about before the podcast, I never thought we'd get past episode 2. So here we are, 45 episodes later.
Yep.
And
well, if it's episode 2 you're basing off of, it's still 43 episodes later.
Well, after 45 episodes.
After 45 episodes, we are here.
We're here. Well, after 44, this is the 45th.
Yes, yes, yes. So every second Wednesday, you can tune in to the podcast. You can find it on tfgtg.blogspot.com. You can find us on iTunes. I'm trying to get us up on Stitcher, which is kind of like the Android version of iTunes, though it's third party.
Okay.
Get our podcast listed on it. And I was thinking about putting our stuff up on SoundCloud, but I'm not. Not sure if that's normal or if that's frowned upon by SoundCloud. I don't know, but
yeah, I'll leave that to you to
Figure it out. Every other Wednesday, though, look for an episode of the Carlos and Dave Anime Rave, which will be up on our site, tfgtg.blogspot.com. It's on our YouTube channel, which we have a link to on that site, and we'll just embed the YouTube video up on a post.
Yeah.
So every Wednesday, there will be content from Carlos and Dave for your enjoyment, whether it's a gaming podcast or us talking about anime.
And, hey, so far we've had pretty good luck with the anime we've been watching.
Yeah, pretty good luck, pretty good luck. We got one episode out there, the Utena episode. We have a few others coming up, Kill la Kill, Sword Art Online,
yeah.
Steins Gate, which we did first, so if you watched our first episode of Anime Rave, and you're wondering us talking about Steins Gate, we actually recorded that before Utena, and we didn't want to put it up there, because it is a shithouse of magnificent proportions.
And that's not just talking about the anime itself, but we tried talking over the actual episode itself while I was playing instead of pausing and talking.
Yeah.
So when it does go up, the production quality is going to be a lot lower than our other ones,
which is so high, yeah, already.
We'll put it up as a here it is. If it annoys you, just stop listening like usual.
If it annoys you, watch another anime review type program.
Yeah,
or not, or
pretty
don't.
Much,
or don't. All right, let's start talking about the thing we're supposed to talk about, which is games. So, do you want to start with the Satan Kickstarter? Or do you want to start with Gaming Clones?
Let's get the awesomeness that is this Kickstarter out of the way. Because I came across this article on a couple different pages over the past week on Polygon. of Did Satan Interfere with a Biblical Kickstarter? Basically, it was a Kickstarter to do a Noah game. Nothing to do with the Noah movie that just has just recently come out.
Which features Emma Watson and her delicious tits. I'm a feminist, ladies and gentlemen.
Actually, am I right? Was it about Noah or was it about one of the other... Anyway,
the point is it's about a biblical Kickstarter,
and they're blaming Satan for not being funded.
That's right, because Satan, as we all know, has a stake in crowdfunding. When crowdfunding goes too far, Satan comes in and says, no. But this is not the weirdest excuse I've heard for a Kickstarter not making it. There was that one Kickstarter game, this card game, where the lady got funded, and then she talked about how at the last second the son told her not to release the game, so she didn't and disappeared with the money.
She was also being tracked by the military, supposedly.
Supposedly.
Her comments field, people had actually donated just to get access to the internal comments. I remember a whole bunch of the stuff that was posted, and she was just one big whack job.
Yeah, and I think you got to be a whack job to blame anything but your own ineptitude at not getting funded. Like, Satan didn't do it, people. Satan didn't interfere with your biblical Kickstarter. Probably having a biblical Kickstarter in 2014 did it.
Yeah, pretty much.
We live in the future, you know. We are a new age of cyber bigots, but at war with cyber rationals. And I don't know if a biblical Kickstarter is going to find that a very friendly environment.
Maybe not. Speaking of Kickstarters, you had a Kickstarter that probably won't get the product to come out.
The one Kickstarter that I now know my money's gone, and that is Super Action Squad. Formerly known as Super Retro Squad, by the guys who made Super Mario Crossover, who gathered a whole bunch of money to make an original product in the vein of Super Mario Crossover. And then development logs made you realize that they weren't really working as much as they were partying and fucking around. And then more development logs down the line, you realize that, yeah, they really haven't gotten anything done in like half a year and then a year and... Now their most recent log says that it's been put on hold indefinitely, and let's be honest, it's probably never coming out. This is the dangers of when you do crowdfunding. I am currently part of a crowdfunding campaign for BlazBits, go support it by the way, on Indiegogo, and me and my compatriots know full well that if we make it, we're going to have to deliver. We're going to start delivering right away. We're not going to party, we're just going to get to work. And you got to do that if you're going to do crowdfunding, at least if you want to maintain some semblance of self-respect or some semblance of respect, period, in the community. And, you know, that happens sometimes. It's a bummer, but that game's never coming out and I'm out my money. Have you encountered any Kickstarters where they just bombed after they got successfully funded?
Actually, no. So far, all the Kickstarters that I've done have come through more because... they've been people who've been around for a very long time.
Such as?
A lot of them are webcomics.
Okay.
That are now being printed, things of that nature. I mean, when you've got a webcomic that has been around for, you know, 5+ years and they're saying, hey, throw it in enough money for me to print it out for you, and we're good.
Funny, you mentioning webcomic made me remember that, yeah, Kickstarter isn't all about games.
Very heavily for board games, video games, all kinds of products. So I don't even really care about the comics, board games, and video games myself. And even with the video games, I've found that I have started to hold off a lot. Because you start getting invested too much, and then you realize how much money you've sunk into Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You're not going to see for possibly 2 years. Like, I kicked in for Star Citizen. That was the last video game I crowdfunded. Because, yeah, it's going to be two and a half years until I get it. I've got a couple of Kickstarters on my list that are worrisome.
That are kind of teetering on the edge.
But we'll see.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, from his podcast, shout out to Steve Austin, would call this a come-to-Jesus meeting where you realize just how much money you've sunk in Kickstarter. And I think I've realized that too. And even though I'm working again and I have money again, even now I'm trying to be more frugal with my crowdfunding dollar.
Yeah, like the last couple things I kickstarted on there was the Mega Man.
Mighty Number 9?
Mighty Number 9. And Shantae.
Shantae.
And I probably put way too much money into the two of those.
Yeah, me too.
But I know I'm going to get my product out of both of them.
I put a ton into Skullgirls, holy shit.
So did I.
Yep. And I don't regret it. Big Band is a lot of fun.
Yep.
Parries, motherfucker. And I hate parries, but I like them on Big Band.
Speaking of clones.
Big Band, clone the parry mechanic. In fact, I think parrying works exactly like for Big Band as it does in Third Strike, right down to the timing.
Yeah.
Although, arguably, in a Marvel-esque setting like Skullgirls is, it's a lot harder to use.
Though you've parried most of a couple of supers that I've done, which have been rather impressive.
Yes, thank you. Thank you kindly. That's because I remember the Third Strike timing, and Big Band operates on that, right? It's a certain rhythm you have to find. But the point of this topic is about gaming clones, and I think you meant it more for mobile games that blatantly clone other mobile games to get a bit of the same buck.
Very much so, because we can argue back and forth, and actually I don't think you would argue about this one.
No, we might argue. We've had arguments.
Many, many games clone other parts or ideas from other games, but that's just how games work.
Every fighting game is some variant on Street Fighter 2.
There you go.
Every single one.
So, we're talking mainly about, you're right, mobile gaming.
Though I am going to bring up some non-mobile examples for your consideration in a minute.
Absolutely.
Here.
But we often hear off of many of our news sites within the gaming community of, you know, this developer is making this kick-ass game. They release their development ideas for it. They're working on it. And before they can even get their game out the door or within a week of getting out the door, some asshole's already made a clone with just one thing tweaked, and the main developers are losing customers, these other guys, because they're either doing it for cheaper, they're lazier, etc.
There's an interesting dynamic at work here, and that's the whole stealing of ideas. Clones have been around forever. There have been Atari 2600 clones.
Mario Brothers, Guyana Sisters.
Yeah, originally Guyana Sisters was just a Mario Brothers clone, although Guyana Sisters kind of became its own thing later.
Yes.
Every variant off Street Fighter, but those games have found their own identities, like Tekken and Mortal Kombat and the Air Dasher genre. And the issue is clones are a form of iteration, and when you have iteration from another company, they can sometimes lead to something great, even though it was just kind of a subset of what came before it, right?
Tetris?
Tetris has its clones.
Tetris Attack.
Yeah, a Puzzled Upon.
Kirby's Avalanche.
The Puyo Pop, or whatever they're called, series.
But those games, specifically, like, take Tetris Attack or Kirby. Mm-hmm. Those were years after Tetris.
Plus,
Tetris had a chance to actually make.
I think those games are licensed too. Like, I think Kirby's Avalanche is a licensed Puyo de Pon product or whatever.
I guess the better game for me to reference there would be Tetris and Dr. Mario.
I am not following you.
Well, Dr. Mario is a lot. It was one of the first Tetris-like games. It was in the NES era. But it was the one that most resembled Tetris.
Did it? Dr. Mario was leagues and leagues beyond what Tetris is. Not beyond, but different.
Different, but it would be the first game that borrowed ideas from Tetris.
Was it really the first? I'm pretty sure there have been puzzle games before Dr. Mario.
But not like Tetris.
But Dr. Mario is not that much like Tetris. You matched up, there are already pieces on the field, and you have to match up like colored things that you're throwing in with those pieces to eliminate them. Tetris is about making lines in what starts as an empty play field.
So someone actually rationalizing that one. I'm not able to, I guess.
If we're talking Puyo Puyo Pop, whatever, which is what Kirby's Avalanche is based off, that's more Tetris-like, I guess, in that all the pieces are coming from you first, and you have to arrange them in a board, and you get garbage thrown in if the other player makes matches. In fact, as I recall, recently in Japan, there was a Tetris meets Puyo game, yes, where one side can play Puyo, the other side can play Tetris, and you can dump garbage on the other side despite what board they're on.
I guess my rationale here is that it was Tetris-like, but it wasn't a direct clone. It wasn't just, instead of your pieces being all one color, they were multicolored or whatever else. It wasn't a direct clone, therefore taking away from the original game.
Well, and we live in such a fast-paced and fast-paced society with a lot of companies with a lot of money that if they get wind of an idea and they can make their own version of it first, yeah, they're going to outsell you. I have kind of a unique perspective on this, and it's not unique at all, so I don't know why I said that. I'm a big douchebag. Shout out to being a douchebag. Where I'm trying to become a screenwriter, and one thing a lot of aspiring screenwriters are afraid of, and they shouldn't be, is getting their ideas stolen. Because here's the secret. There are like 8 movies, and every movie is some derivative of those 8. And nobody's going to steal your idea because somebody's already making it. So when it comes down to storytelling, a lot of people guard their ideas, and I kind of get that, but ultimately, even if your idea gets made, and I've had a few scripts where something like it came out, even though I was writing it, I didn't talk to that person in Hollywood, and even if they did talk to me and swipe it, there's not much I could do. They might have had the idea already. I could just change the characters and wording and setting a bit and still make something awesome. Gaming's a little tougher. If you have an innovative idea for, like, a puzzler that hasn't quite been done before, and you kickstart it, and it's like a year off, and I don't know, King.com or Zynga or something wants to swipe it that fast, they probably have the resources to do so fairly easily, and since they have your basic idea down, and it's just your own coding that's in the way, they can beat you to the punch. So, I don't know, iterate, leave the innovation to big companies and hope they'll do it, and just do the iteration part. I think there's a place for cloning, there's a place for iteration. Cloning has left us with some of our best games, where an original idea didn't quite cut it, and someone made a clone that did.
Yes and no. So some of the clones that we're seeing now are pretty dirty.
Some of them are dirty! Dirty money grabs!
And I guess once again it comes down, we can only blame ourselves, because it is the community at large that then goes and pays for these clones.
Yes, they do! Gamers are stupid. I love gaming, but gamers are dumb. We are a dumb, dumb subset of the consumer market.
I wouldn't say dumb. I would say that we are very focused on our money. And sometimes we don't reward the original creators.
Yeah, we don't do the homework, and we don't go out and say, hey, you know, this game does something better, let's go that. And I'm guilty too. I ideologically, I should not have dropped a dime on Pokemon Y, but I did. I should have continued playing Kongai on Kongregate, which is like Pokemon but better. But I don't. I play more Pokemon than I do Kongai, so I'm kind of guilty too. I guess we kind of hope the big developers will make better games, or we try to speak out and still enjoy the games we have. I don't know. It's a complicated situation, and we are lazy motherfuckers for not fixing it actively.
I mean, I wanted to talk on this, because as I look at my iPhone here, back in the day I didn't want to pay for Cut the Rope, mm-hmm, for example. So I found a free one that was exactly the same thing, just by a different developer. It was called Catch the Princess. And it is Cut the Rope down to every mechanic. But I didn't pay for it, but I still played it, so I still support it.
Well, maybe we need to look inward. Maybe we need to look in a mirror and go, okay, let's try from now on. Let's try to do better by ourselves. Maybe we should do this, Dave. Maybe we should, on this podcast, say, we're going to try to financially support games that deserve it over games that don't. Maybe we should. Do you want to make a Do you want to make a two fat guys pseudo promise on air right now?
It's going to be a little bit hard because we both have different tastes in games.
No, we can still do it. Like, even though you like shitty zombie games and shitty adventure games, you can still support the ones that are good in that shittiness. And while my tastes are far and beyond above yours, I can still support the primo examples of those instead of the shitty ones, which are still, by nature, much better than the games you like. So, pseudo-promise made right here. You heard it here first. Dave will no longer buy any free clone of any game. Under punishment of catapult.
Speaking of catapults.
What the hell are you doing with this?
Or at least game corruption.
So,
you may remember, if you've been following news in the United States as far as game lobbying and game laws, Leland Yee in California managed to pass a gaming restriction law, which was then shot down by their Supreme Court.
Sweet.
And the dude has now been arrested for gun trafficking and corruption.
Well, you know what?
Shout outs to Leland Yee for standing up for what you believe in, you dumb motherfucker.
Without trying to offend our listeners who may be more right-wing political types, because I have nothing against fiscal conservatism at all. It's social conservatism that I have a beef against. And when I say right-wing in a negative way, that's who I'm attacking. It's the social conservatives. The ass-backwards fucking cretins who think video games need to be censored and relegated regulated is the word I meant, and who pick on these little pet issues while robbing their constituents blind. And it's no surprise to me to see a piece of shit like this doing something illegal. It's like all those fucking homophobic bigots who talk about, you know, that the gays are gonna burn in hell, and then, there's gay porn all over their computers. And it's child gay porn to boot. You know, like, these right-wing nutjobs, and again, I mean the social conservatives, they are stupid as shit. They are trying to be in control of people and take people's money, and ultimately, deep down, they're just as flawed and fucked up as the rest of us. They just want to limit our ability to be flawed and fucked up. So fuck this guy, and I hope he goes away for a while.
That's the hope. Speaking of a while, the Kinect for PC is coming out soon.
Yes. That's all we're going to say about that, because fuck the Kinect. If there's something I hate more than right-wing social conservatism, it's the Kinect. Or the fucking $50 price increase on the PlayStation 4 in Canada. Why, Sony, would you do this to me?
I have no segue into our next one because of what you just said.
Okay, I'll segue into it. Watch this. Speaking of the Oculus being bought by Facebook. So the Oculus Rift has been bought by Facebook. Moving on, because nobody gives a fuck.
No. You know, the whole VR idea is...
retarded.
No, I don't think so.
Retarded.
No.
Gay.
No.
Oh, why did I say that? I am an open person. I'm not a homophobe. I shouldn't have said that. I apologize to...
Three people listening to this.
Let me say what I should have said. Retarded!
No. The idea of looking at a battlefield or a game in a 3D environment is okay.
You're going to get mind hacked and I'm going to have to go save you. And I don't want to, because I'm going to have to meet a lot of boring NPCs, other people. And they're going to want to be my friend, and I'm not going to want to have anything to do with them.
Well, tough. Because thanks to the Facebook one now, people will be able to like your efforts.
So here's what I think about VR. Okay, I don't have enough gas to muster a fart right now. But it's like this. Look, I don't need another reality to be disappointed in. I'll keep with my televisions and gamepads, thank you.
Okay, but think of the Oculus more as being able to see the game in 3D.
So what I can do already. You know, I have a 3DS, right? And the 3D works surprisingly well.
It does, but I've seen some of the stuff that the Oculus has been doing. It's had a lot of developer support, which now some developers are pulling out because they don't like Facebook. They don't like Facebook's data policies. They don't like them. Companies like Minecraft.
Shoutouts to our new sponsor, Facebook, for sponsoring Two Fat Guys Talk Games. Facebook, we buy everything you love.
Now, if we were so, actually sponsored
what
by Facebook.
What were you saying about glorious Facebook?
No, not going to happen.
I have a knife.
I don't give a shit. I would not bow down to Facebook.
Would you accept a sponsor, though? What if Audible wanted to sponsor us?
Sure, but not the evil overlords at Facebook.
What about if North Korea wanted to sponsor us? We wouldn't really get that much money out of them, mind you.
Nor would we be allowed to. They have sanctions against them.
Okay, let me tell old Kimmy that we can't do it. So speaking of Xbox...
I had no segue. I'll just say that outright. So the Xbox, naughty or nice, they are now starting to enforce their community behavior system.
Did you call it behavior?
Behavior.
Okay. I said this to Chris Weston in our Flashcast. Shout outs to Chris Weston. Lost my train of... Right. Okay. I'm kind of concerned with a trend in gaming. As I am so many trends in gaming, as you well know, Dave. Would you say I'm often concerned about gaming trends?
You're concerned about way, way too much, but I think you're segueing into the next one already.
Yeah, so this is my issue, okay, with gaming. We have become a society where, you know, we have our gaming accounts and what they used to be okay, for.
I'm going to pause you there. You're jumping this one already.
No, but it's tied. It's tied to this.
Not really.
It's totally tied to this.
Okay,
because,
go.
Because without this, they can't manage our bad behavior. Okay, you know what? I'll make it quick. We have a lot of online accounts for gaming and games, and that used to be all fine and dandy for just keeping shit organized. And now it's taking over and becoming how we game. We're always connected to a service. And now Xbox One is starting to monitor our behavior and telling us how to behave. Go.
I don't think they're telling us how to behave. I think they're actually giving people that logically complain about other people's behavior. You know, the 12-year-old on Call of Duty swearing every 5 seconds at his teammates for being donkey raping shit eaters.
Oh, South Park the movie.
Thank you, South Park. It gives an avenue to actually exclude these people from normal matches and put them into, I guess, their plan, actually putting together people who like to swear at each other. For example, the bad behavior system. Now, the problem I've got with this is it is open for abuse. Microsoft says no, it isn't, because they're monitoring and they're going to look for, you know, did that person report you because you kicked their ass? You mentioned you've had some negative reports against you because you did kick people's ass in a fighting game.
Yep.
Now, here's the problem I want people to think about for this exact issue. Now, if they're able to go back and look at stats, only tell you so much. Okay, so I downed that guy in 10 seconds. Does it mean that I swore at him? Does it mean that I did this or I did that? For them to have the full picture, this means they've got to be recording both video and Xbox Live audio to be able to tell that, you know, this kid swore at you for all 2 minutes of the match, that he was disrespectful, or he or she did this. How much data are they keeping, and for how long on what you're doing to be able to tell, did this really happen?
Well, big companies keeping our data is nothing new, Google. So this is not a new thing. Yeah, they have to be doing it. But I'm not so much concerned that they're doing it, because I figure every single word that I utter is being recorded by someone all the time, no matter where I am. I'm more concerned with the fact that they're putting time and effort into this, that they could spend putting into, you know, their games.
Yeah, but Microsoft himself doesn't make games anymore.
No, but they are making a game system and a brand that has lost money since its inception, where its shareholders have told them they don't want them to be doing Xbox products anymore, where they keep like an always-on online infrastructure for their games, which is going to leave a bunch of games stranded when they eventually shut it off. Microsoft has some strange priorities. This doesn't seem like it's that important, and they're wasting time on it.
I guess I can see what you're saying there. I mean, it's something they promised for a while. It's something they promised they'd do something with back in the Xbox 360 days, which never came to anything. Certain games on their own are doing similar things to this, like
that one basketball game that fouls you for swearing that you were telling me about.
Oh, okay. Thank you for reminding me of that one. I haven't been pissed off at that for a while. There are extremes, obviously. I mean, that was EA's latest NBA game, where if you're playing online and you're using the Kinect, and it's listening, and you swear, it fouls you. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Oh, fouled. Actually, I'd have a lot of fun if I went over to a friend's place and they were playing NBA. Number one, I'd be making fun of them for playing NBA, but I would swear up a storm just to see how far I could take it.
Cuntbag!
I'd be looking to see what words would trigger the fouls, definitely. But to get onto a little bit of what topic you were bringing up in there as well, online systems. Now, I don't have the amount of concern that you seem to on this. In that, I mean, I've got a central account for PlayStation, I've got a central account for Xbox, I've got my Steam account, I've got an Origin account, which I've let rot in the bowels of hell.
No!
Yeah, right beside Satan there, just working on Kickstarter. But I don't see a problem with these central accounts. I know you were throwing in the online versus offline as well. Most of my games can be played in offline mode on Steam, Canton Origin. But a lot of these games you're worried about, you know, will be taken offline after a number of years. They were made with the online components. I'll use EA as a great example for this. For their racers, for their sports games. After 2 years after the game comes out, they shut down the servers for all those games. So the online component is no longer there, but the game still runs.
I'm okay with that.
The only games that stop working completely are games that either relied on a online service that gave you opponents, a la, like, Blur, or MMOs.
And maybe my concern is more that more games are going along those lines, where they're tying themselves to these central accounting services to the point that, you know, gaming isn't becoming a thing where we can be disconnected from it, even as we do it with others. It's like, what if you had to log into an account just to go see a movie in a theater? What if you had to log on to your Paramount online account or your Cineplex online account? I'm not talking about getting Scene rewards points. I'm talking about needing to be checked in order to check in, basically. And I'm okay with having an online account that keeps your shit in order, tracks your achievements, and that lets you play multiplayer with people. That's all good. In fact, those are awesome. Those are things I wish we had in our lives sooner. I'm talking about the shit where that's becoming like choking. Like, we have Xbox managing our reputations for us so that they matchmake based on how many times people swear, because well, some people can't take swearing. I have an issue with, it's really Xbox. I have an issue with EA being grimy with their online service. And even though Steam is awesome, I'm a little uncomfortable that more and more of my library seems to be electronic Steam games. Like, maybe I'm just an old fogey and I'm just afraid of the future we live in.
Well, like, I can understand being afraid that, you know, if tomorrow Valve crashed, that we lose access to so many games. That is a valid concern, other than the fact that Steam has more money than God, and therefore isn't going anywhere. But we do have more and more games that will become inaccessible. Well, the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4. We both have an Xbox 360 and a PlayStation 3.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those
mm-hmm.
games are not playable on our PlayStation 4 Xbox One.
Mm-mm, mm-mm.
So for us to continue playing those games, we have to keep the old system plugged in and working. And who's to say one day Microsoft or Sony, but I think it's more Microsoft that would do that, to be honest, won't pull the plug on us being able to access those old games.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think I'm accurate in that, saying that it would be more Microsoft doing that?
Oh, yeah. It would be way more Microsoft doing that than Sony.
I could see Sony still supporting a PlayStation 3 PSN game even in the days of PlayStation 5.
I can also see Sony raising our fucking prices by $50 a console because those stupid pieces of shit can't set a fucking console price and stick with it, because, oh no, the Canadian dollar might have lost a cent on the U.S. Fuck you, Sony. But you're right.
You know, our games are also $10 more?
But yeah, it would totally be Microsoft that does it first.
Just so I could see the little vein above your eye tick a little bit faster. And that brings us to our next topic. Price of software versus the content versus the length of content.
AKA the Ground Zeroes conundrum. Now, I don't give two shits about Metal Gear Solid anything. The only game I want to play in that franchise is Revengeance, and I will. Because it's the only game that looks like it takes its ridiculousness at face value as being ridiculous and is going to be a blast to play. Every other thing that has Metal Gear on it, I've never had fun with, I don't care about, and I don't give two fucks about in general. When people say it's the primo gaming story, I kind of want to slap their face with my cock. Now, this brings up the question of Ground Zeroes. We've seen Angry Joe's review. I've listened to the Super Best Friend cast about this, and there are generally opinions going around as to how is a game entitled to give you a certain amount of playtime hours for a price you pay for it. My general opinion on this is that's subjective. That's up to you. There are great 4-hour games that shit all over terrible 80-hour games. And there are great 1-hour games that shit all over terrible 80-hour games. Now, are you willing to pay $60 for a great 1-hour game? Are you willing to pay $5 for that same experience? That's all up to you. Should gaming criticism take this into account? Should we just simply go, well, the critic is going to have their own subjective opinion, then they got to say whether or not they think it's worth it? Should they divorce themselves from the price? Should gamers divorce themselves from the price? Is this an alarming trend? Why is Konami so fucking stupid? Why is Sony raising our prices? That's kind of the idea that I'm going with on this topic.
Okay, so I'll cover a few things there. When it comes to the Ground Zero Metal Gear Solid stuff, I definitely agree that doing a full charge price for like a disc for this, what accounts to a prologue.
With a bunch of side missions.
With a bunch of side missions. Is an alarming trend. To call it a trend, though, probably isn't fair at this point, but with them succeeding in this, I do believe it's going to become a trend.
Now, is this worse or better? Is them Konami selling this? And I don't like Konami a lot these days. They fucked over Skullgirls too much, and they're fucking over Castlevania a bunch, and like, Konami just pisses me off in general.
Yep.
But is Konami fair? Is it fair for them to be charging $40 for what amounts to a fairly complete package of Metal Gear gameplay, counting the main and side missions, even if it is a prologue to something that's going to come later? I would argue...
They know their fan base, and looking at this, distancing myself from how little I think Metal Gear is a good series or anything else, for $30... they knew their fans, and they knew that they would sell. Largely from the Metal Gear Solid fans, they're lapping this shit up.
I would argue that they are totally allowed to do this, and that I don't even think it's wrong. I don't even think it's wrong for them to sell a game at this price that seems to have a fair amount of content in it. Like, and again, this is subjective. I want a certain amount of content for my price, but what I count as content is a little different. If I might pay $60 for an awesome 1 hour game and play that game over and over and over and over and over again, and that'll be worth the value to me. Or maybe that 1 hour is worth $60 to me. It's subjective. But from the outside looking in and not giving two fucks about Metal Gear anything, I look at Ground Zeroes and I'm like, this seems to be a fully featured game for $40. I'm not sure what the hoopla is about this game. But perhaps, you know, we do have concerns where free-to-play games financially rip people new assholes, and does this get lumped into that?
I don't think so. I think ultimately in this case, and Angry Joe and a couple other places that I've gone looking for this stuff as mentioned, is it is a prologue. It is very much a... I don't think it's fair to call it a demo. But as far as a prologue sequence goes, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours worth of gameplay for $30, other companies, Capcom included, have released this sort of content in the past for $5.
True. You know what company released it for a full price? A little place called Bungie with ODST. Remember that? Were supposed to be priced like at $20 or something, and then they eventually threw in all the Halo 3 multiplayer maps into a new disc, and they justified putting it back up to like $60 for that reason.
But ODST was a fully functional long game.
Was it truly?
Yes.
I remember ODST was a lot of fun, and arguably way more fun than Halo 3. And
ODST was not a couple hour game.
No, but it wasn't that much longer than that.
That was a 6 hour game.
It didn't take me 6 hours to blow through ODST. Mm-hmm. Granted, I didn't go then do it by myself on Legendary like I was tempted to for some of the other Halos. But ODST could qualify as, because storyline wise, it was happening during the events of Halo 3. And it's kind of a Halo 3 side story where you take control of characters that aren't Master Chief or the Arbiter. It really is kind of a side story. And arguably, it's not unlike Ground Zeroes, which itself, you could argue the main draw of Ground Zeroes are these side stories it gives you in terms of like the Snake side story from the PS1 era and the Raiden Body Snatcher side story and stuff like that. You're getting a big side story in ODST, and it asked you full price for it. I remember thinking, man, it sucks that I got to pay full price for this, but what a fun campaign. I don't know. I think this is just it's complicated, and I don't know if – and again, I'm the last person to go defend Konami or Metal Gear for anything. I'm just wondering if this isn't being all blown out of proportion.
I think it's more – I don't think it's being blown out of proportion. I think everybody's worried about a potential trend. And that would worry me. I mean, price versus length versus content, as this is. I remember a lot of people being pissed off at The Darkness 2 for not being as long as The Darkness 1 for full price. But yet, I've gone through The Darkness 2 three or four times, and it is just a fun 4 to 6 hour romp. Who am I to justify the price or to be condescending towards the price for a game when you enjoy it? Maybe I don't, so I can make my comments, but...
Well, I think it's subjective. I think you are allowed to go, yeah. Carlos, why the fuck did you spend $60 on Diablo 3 for PS3 when you already had a free copy on your PC? You're allowed to do that.
And I did at one point.
Yeah, you did. Now, I'm not bringing that up to try to rub this in your face or nothing. It's just an example. You did bring that up. And I justified that by saying I'm having a lot more fun with this version. And you eventually bought it when it was on sale, and you had a lot more fun with that version until Reaper of Souls, right?
Yeah.
And I know I got on your case for any amount of Harvest Moon games that you bought that I thought were not worth the price of admission. And yeah, it's okay for me to go, fuck you, stupid farming sim piece of shit. And it's okay for you to go, fuck you, you fat motherfucker. I'm allowed to farm. At least I'm getting more hoes. And that's all okay. I think this is subjective, and I love Angry Joe, don't get me wrong, but Angry Joe likes to focus on the length of a campaign in hours, and I always think that's the wrong way to approach reviewing a game. Although Angry Joe, one thing I'll say about him, and this is why I like his reviews, in addition to being funny, he's honest. I believe what he's saying as truth, unlike a lot of game reviewers.
Yeah, I mean... I would never... I'm interested in Metal Gear Solid 5. But there's no way, knowing what I do about the prologue now, Ground Zero, that I would buy it.
Sure, and that is totally fine. It is totally fine for you to go, you know what, that is not worth that money for me. I'll wait till I see it in a bargain bin. It's subjective. Because here's the thing, yeah, games are art, but they're still a functional piece of art. And function has a price, and different people are willing to pay different things. And maybe I'm a big hypocrite, because I'll argue that people shouldn't pay extra for Square Enix phone games where they don't for other phone games, but some people are willing to do so, and I've done so, so I don't know. This is one of those topics that I don't think has an easy answer, and that I'm going to cop out by saying I don't think there's an easy answer.
I don't think we're copping out at all. We've given our thoughts on it. Yeah, but we're not trying to say this is how it absolutely must be. We're a little more open than a lot of podcasts on that.
Oh, I'm not open at all. I just fake it.
Uh-huh.
I am the most closed-minded person in the world.
Great.
Yes. I keep a midget as a pet.
Speaking of closed-minded...
We have a new segment on the show, everyone, and we're probably only going to do this segment where it's relevant, so it won't be an every episode thing.
Yeah.
I wish I had music for this, but we call it, and, you know, Dave gets all credit for this awesome name. Good name, let's say it. You thought of the name. You thought of the name. I thought of the segment.
Oh, yeah.
I thought to have the segment, and you thought of the brilliant
That's
name.
That's true.
The Peter Molyneux Shitlord Saga. Chapter 1. When has Peter Molyneux said anything worthwhile?
Oh, God.
So recently, Peter Molyneux, the most useless sack of crap our industry has ever seen, right behind David Cage, and I'd argue David Cage has probably contributed a smidgen more. Oh, God, kill me now, I just commented.
Yes, you did. Guy. I'm sorry, you must die now.
Peter Molyneux said, enjoy the indie trend while it lasts, it's not going to last forever. This is because Peter Molyneux, anytime he opens his fat fucking mouth, says nothing. When is the last time Peter Molyneux has said something and it's been important? Well, that's a trick question. He's never done it.
No, he actually has. Now, as you know, I'm a big fan of a couple of his games.
Sure.
That he was either producer or designer or programmer on.
Sure, you like Syndicate. You like Syndicate. You like Black and White.
I liked Black White was okay, but his two games I liked the most were Syndicate and Dungeon Keeper.
Sure.
And when he spoke up here recently against EA's Cash Cow Dungeon Keeper iPhone game, he had a lot of... He actually had a good message in there of, what the fuck, this is shit.
Sure, I am willing to put aside the shitlord comment to say, good on you, Peter Molyneux, for saying something, like, poignant for once. Okay,
but
that's one point in shitlord's favor.
But shitlord there has said that he is reinventing the video game every time he releases
a game. Every time he makes a game, I am reinventing how games are played. And sometimes... You get stupid magazines, like, repeating that message, like PC Gamer, because, oh, PC Gaming Master Race, Peter Molyneux has reinvented this gaming scape over and over, console games can't keep up. And then Official Xbox Magazine, it's like, man, the GameCube won't be able to keep up, because Peter Molyneux is going to reinvent the game with Fable. Yeah, he made a Zelda clone. Yeah, okay, he made a Zelda clone with some shitty moral choices in it. Fuck you, Official Xbox Magazine. Peter Molyneux is... the poster boy for thinking he's hot shit while not being hot shit. He is worse than the Portuguese soccer team, where they promise good things every World Cup and are often the number one or two team in the world and then always, always fail to deliver. Peter Molyneux is not even that high-seated. He is just a piece of shit who always talks big and never delivers.
And that's true. I mean, he promises so much... every reiteration of Fable to, you know, I think his most recent game was Goddess?
The only Peter Molyneux game I really know and respect is Populous. And I'm pretty sure way back then he was talking about how it reinvented gaming as well.
Oh, he did.
So fuck Peter Molyneux and everything he stands for. And no, he's wrong. Indie games are not going away anytime soon. Whether or not I like or dislike indie games, and I like a bunch and I hate a whole bunch more, indie games arose for a purpose, and gaming is not beyond the reach of many people now. Indie games are only going to be a thing for the foreseeable future, so Peter Molyneux should shut his fat fucking mouth like he always should shut his fat fucking mouth, because he's never right.
I mean, ultimately, him saying it indie games are going away. Indie games are the only thing that has brought the games industry back around to a little bit of sanity. I mean, the fact that indie games have been so successful, if it hadn't been for that those successes, I don't think the games industry would still be properly functional. We were heading for a crash.
Do you really think so?
I really do think so.
Now, I think indie games need to exist. I think a lot of them are shit, but a lot of them are really good too. More shit than good. But I want them to exist. I want there to be, just like how I think a lot of indie movies and a lot of indie music are garbage too. But indie music and movies have produced some of the finest works of art our planet has seen. And even the shitty ones need to exist. So that A, you know, there's competition and comparison out there, and B, we can appreciate the good stuff even more when they do suck. So no, he's wrong. And he's a shitlord.
And this is now his saga.
This is now his saga. Chapter 2 of the Peter Molyneux shitlord saga will no doubt resurface when he makes another game and talks about how...
Or just when he opens his mouth.
Just when he opens his mouth in general. What a stupid piece of shit.
Well, that's all we've got for this week.
Yeah, good talk about a variety of topics. We're recording this on the 30th of March, so 31st one. You should be listening to this on the 2nd of April. And then a week after that, we'll have episode 2 of our Carlos and Dave Anime Rave, which I don't think I'm going to number. I think we're just going to refer to them as episode title for the anime in question, because it's going to start to be some... Super Mario Advance 4, Super Mario Brothers 3 shit.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, occasionally we will go back, we will watch a second episode or maybe even a third episode of a series. If we're enjoying it, it might become a continuing thing.
What we should
within
consider.
Within a series. But there are going to be episodes like Steins Gate where we're not going to want to go 3 episodes in, because my God.
I'm willing to go into the second episode, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to hate it.
Well, we do have to go into the second episode.
And one thing we should consider, even if we go three episodes into something we like and start watching it regularly, is we should revisit its final episode.
Yes.
Yes. And spoil it for the entire internet!
Yes, yes.
Yes, so...
spoiler alerts for all that stuff, but...
So
yeah, that's our plans right now.
Yeah, just before we sign off here, once again, tfgtg.podcast. I got our stupid site wrong, and I was getting on your case for TFGTG, short for Two Fat Guys Talk Games, .blogspot.com is our podcast site, where you can find our feed link, our YouTube channel, our episodes of Carlos and Dave Anime Rave. We also have the podcast up on iTunes, and I'm looking into Stitcher and SoundCloud, so take a look at those soon. I don't know if having regular episodes of the Anime Rave on YouTube will let us qualify to maybe get something on some other video service, like the ones that they use on That Guy with the Glasses.
Maybe.
They use some video service where you have to have regular episodes to qualify to even be on it. So, I don't know. We'll try to reach more avenues soon, because, you know, even though Dave thought we were never going to get off the ground on this, we totally have, and we are now an internet sensation in the minds of at least four people.
Yeah, never going to get past episode 2, and...
We're in episode 45, and doing a spin-off series, and I'm appearing on some other podcasts as a guest, and Dave is trying to avoid that, but I'm slowly pressuring him to do the same thing so that we can have maximum reach.
Oh, good lord.
Yes, because people want to hear Dave's opinions.
No, they don't.
No, they do, they do. I think, here's the thing, I'm the good-looking one. And you're the...
Wow, we're really screwed then.
I'm the good-looking one. I'm like Sherlock Holmes, and you're like Watson. I solve all the problems, and you punch me in the face every once in a while.
Speaking of which...
Oh, God. Duels enforced. So what, are we fucking done here?
I think we're good for now.
All right, my name is Carlos.
This has been Dave.
Two Fat Guys Talk Games, episode 45. Yeah, this is episode 45. We're going to do our...
So, if you've liked what you heard, you want to leave us some feedback, you want to give us some criticism, whatever, our podcast site is tfgtg.blogspot.com, where you can also find the feed link and our YouTube channel.
You can also find us on Twitter at tfgtg. Yeah. There's no way to continue that. So,
no way to please, that sentence.
Please leave us some feedback. We accept good and bad. We will usually respond, seeing as we have such a small group. Audience.
We do have thousands of millions of followers, so we might not respond to you right away.
Sure, let's go with that.